want to begin by telling a little story, but in addition to the story that I want to tell, I want to tell you also how I came by this story. And so I'm trying to not be like the pole vaulter who goes so far back that by the time he gets to the vault, he's out of breath. So I hope that I'm not too long-winded in laying all of this out for you. But in the last century, there was a newspaper man who gained a little bit of notoriety. His name is Fulton Orsler. Most of you have probably never heard that name before, Fulton Orsler. He was a convert to the Catholic faith and a very well-known, a person of some notoriety in the last century. Even though you might not know his name, I'm sure you're familiar with one of the books that he wrote, because one of the books that he wrote was The Greatest Story Ever Told, and of course was eventually made into a movie and that. So you're familiar with at least some of his work, probably. Well, Fulton Orsler, one of the things he did is he collected a number of stories together, true stories about different things, and he put them all together in this collection of stories that he entitled Modern Parables. And that's where I get the story from, is a story told by Fulton Orsler. But it's a story about a doctor, Adolf Lorenz, who is a doctor in Vienna, and he gained himself a certain amount of notoriety because he came up with a new technique performing surgeries, and he, through this technique, was able to heal a young girl of a fairly, fairly prominent family who nobody else was able to help. She had gone to many doctors, but nobody was really able to help her. But Dr. Lorenz was able to bring about a cure, and because this new technique brought about a cure in the life of this young girl, his fame spread, at least to a certain extent. But that's what brought him eventually to the United States, because he was traveling around the United States to different hospitals in order to teach this new technique that he had come out with. But one day, he wanted to have a little bit of time to himself. He was constantly surrounded by other people and even some security that constantly surrounded him. So he snuck out, evaded his security, and just went for a walk. But while he was out for a walk, this violent thunderstorm came upon him, and he could find no place for shelter, so he went up to the door of a nearby house and knocked on the door. And a woman answered the door, but she ultimately slammed the door shut in Dr. Lorenz's face. Somewhat with the words, I don't remember the exact words that she said, but something to the effect of, "Leave us alone. Don't you know that we have enough trouble in this house?" So she slams the door in his face. As he turns around again with no place to go, his security finally caught up with him. He got into the car that the security was driving and was taken away to the hotel where he was staying. But the next day, this woman who slammed the door in his face opened the newspaper and gasped, because the trouble that was in her house was that her daughter was suffering from the very same illness that this girl that Dr. Lorenz had cured had been suffering with. And she had been writing to Dr. Lorenz, and he had been getting letters from all sorts of people because they wanted him to help them out in their difficult situation. She had been writing to Dr. Lorenz, but because of his schedule, he didn't have time for everybody. And here, divine providence had brought Dr. Lorenz to her very door, and she slammed the door shut on his face. That, I think, is a story that is applicable to the feast that we celebrate today with Christmas. Because one of the things that we find in the Christmas story that we heard just a few moments ago was that there was no place for them at the inn. The very person that had been longed for, that the people desired came into their midst, and they didn't recognize him. Tomorrow, when we have the Gospel of John, it's a little bit even clearer, as it says that he came to his own people, and his own people didn't accept him. Now, there are many ways in which we slam the door shut in the face of God, even though that's the one that we need. I mean, we need God to come to us. We need God to save us. We need God to heal us. And we slam the door shut. There's many different ways that we do that. I'm not going to go into specifics for a couple of reasons. One of them is that with all of you here, every one of you has a different question in your own life. All of you have a particular struggle that you are struggling with, and so I can't address all of them. And I don't want to. The other reason is because I don't want to upset you as you're getting ready to celebrate Christmas, and I don't want you to get upset at me. I want to have a good Christmas too. So I won't get into a lot of specifics, because there are many different ways in which we slam the door shut on the face of God, who's coming to help us. But one of the things I wanted to say about this is, in terms of the holy year that we are embarking on in 2025. Just earlier today, Pope Francis opened the holy doors at St. Peter's in Rome. Now, these doors are shut all the time, except for a holy year, that those doors are opened and people are invited to pass through those holy doors during the holy year. There's only one holy door in all of North America, and that's at the cathedral in Quebec City. It's the only place. So if you get to Quebec City this year, go to the cathedral, go through the holy door, because it's only open on the year when we are celebrating a Jubilee year. And the whole idea of the Jubilee year comes from the scriptures, that every 50 years they would have a Jubilee year, which was a year of mercy. It was a year when debts would be forgiven. People would be restored to their property. If they lost their ancestral heritage in terms of their property, they would be restored to their property. All of these things would happen. It was a time of mercy. But we see that oftentimes we want to receive mercy, but we're not always that willing to give mercy. You know, as we enter into a Jubilee year, certainly we want to seek the mercy of God, but we also have to be people of mercy as well. Because what happened in the Old Testament? When a Jubilee year was approaching, because debts were forgiven, all of these things would take place, what would happen is people wouldn't lend money. So if you knew that in a few years you'd have to forgive that debt, you know, you wouldn't help people out. Because you didn't want to be taken advantage of. So again, it just shows how difficult it is for us to really be people of mercy to one another. So in this Jubilee, it's not just receiving mercy, it's showing mercy to others. But Pope Francis has designated this holy year as something where we seek out the theological virtue of hope. He talks about us being pilgrims of hope. Advent, that leads up to the Christmas season, is a season of hope. And I just want to mention something about the virtue of hope. All of those who have heard me speak before probably get tired of me speaking about some of these things, but the reality is the virtue of hope is oftentimes misunderstood by us. And this is, again, something where we tend to slam the door shut in God's face, because we want things done our way, and we're not always willing to do things God's way. Because sometimes when we think about hope, what people very often are calling hope is really simply wishful thinking, because they want God to do things their way. They want God, you know, they want to be able to say, jump, and God respond by saying, how high? We want God to do our will. So often we pray those words, thy will be done. But so often we say, my will be done. I want to do it my way. And so this is sometimes where we get into a little bit of difficulty. Because the authentic virtue of hope is about trusting in God. The act of hope, the prayer that I learned as a child growing up, starts off this way. It says, "O my God, relying on thy almighty power and infinite mercy and promises, I hope to obtain pardon of my sins, the help of thy grace, and life everlasting, through the merits of Jesus Christ, my Lord and Redeemer." But you'll notice those three things. Relying on your almighty power, God's powerful enough to do this, God's powerful enough to save me. Even though I'm weak, even though I'm a sinner, God is powerful enough to save me. Your infinite mercy, God is merciful enough that he wants to save me. But then your promises. What are we talking about there? This is where, again, we move from wishful thinking to an authentic reality of hope. That I don't try to get God to do my will. I don't just sort of live my life whatever way I want and then say, "God, bless me. Let me just keep out of my way. Just let me do what I want to do but bring me to heaven." Bring me to heaven anyways. But what the promises are is when God says, "If you do this, I will reward you. If you follow in my ways, I will bless you." That's what it means, that I do what God has asked me to do as a condition of me getting to heaven. Even if I do it imperfectly, but I do what God has asked me to do. And I trust that because I've tried to do it God's way, that God will bring me into the life that he has promised. So, when we think about that story of Dr. Lorenz and how he had the door slammed in his face, even though this is the very person that would have brought a lot of joy to this home, we don't want to be like that. We don't want to slam the door in the face of God. We want to welcome him in. We want to bring him into our home. Not only our home, our physical home in terms of our house, but the home of our heart. To allow him to bring us the joy that is connected with this, but the joy that is based on this life of hope, where we do what God has asked us to do with that hope of God bringing us to eternal life.